Hello and welcome to the Provider Wellness Podcast. I'm Matthew Zinder, a certified registered nurse anesthetist. I'm an advanced practice nurse that specializes in the practice of anesthesia. The scope of this podcast will explore healthcare provider health and wellness from the broad to the specific. My aim is to educate while offering a unique perspective. Thank you for joining me today, and let's get right to the show. Hey folks, I hope everyone is well. In today's episode, I have a conversation with the members of the Health and Wellness Committee of the American Association of Nurse Anesthesiology. This is the first time I've ever spoken to more than one person on this podcast, so this was a fun and interesting conversation for me. I speak with Kathy Hovath, Donna Keeney, Christine Tierney, and Sarah Forsyth. They are all certified registered nurse anesthetists, as I am. We discuss the different stages of a career in healthcare based on the diverse range of years' experience that this committee represents and how their perception and practice of self-care has changed over time. We also discuss their motivations for joining a committee such as this and what they hope to achieve during their time as a member. As an aside, for the listeners that are CRNAs, you'll notice that I introduced the members in the beginning of the recording as committee members of the National Association of Nurse Anesthesiology. I have no idea where that came from, other than possibly the fatigue of recording a show at the end of a long workday, because I'm fully aware that the organization is called the American Association of Nurse Anesthesiology since I've been a member for over 20 years. So sorry about that. Maybe a little history. It was first called the National Association of Nurse Anesthetists when it was first created, but I'm not sure where that came from. Anyway, I hope you do enjoy this conversation as much as I did. As always, please keep checking back for future episodes. I have many planned that will be covering many important topics in health and wellness. All previous episodes are available at providerwellnesspodcast.com. And remember, this show is available on all podcast platforms, so please subscribe and share the episodes. If you wish to email me with any feedback or suggestions for future shows, please do so at providerwellnesspodcast@gmail.com. And finally, I'd like to mention the national meeting I'm involved with called the Provider Wellness Symposium. Please go to providersymposium.com for more information about this important event where healthcare professionals are enabled and empowered to engage in self-care. For those who take care of others, it is time to take care of yourselves. Again, go to providersymposium.com for more information. So without further delay, here is my conversation with the American Association of Nurse Anesthesiology's Health and Wellness Committee. All right. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. For the listeners, this is actually the first time I have ever had more than one guest on the Provider Wellness Podcast. So this is exciting for me. We're going to have a roundtable discussion about many different topics, obviously about wellness, but also something very interesting that we are going to be able to do, and that is talk about different stages of career in terms of years of experience. So this group that we're going to be speaking, or I'm going to be speaking to this evening, is the Health and Wellness Committee of the National Association of Nurse Anesthesiology. And interestingly enough, each individual in this committee basically represents a certain stage of experience in this career, whether it be in healthcare or advanced practice nursing or specifically nurse anesthesia. So we're going to kind of get into a conversation about how different levels of experience or time in the profession actually can affect wellness, how it's different, how it's introduced into one's path or career, all these types of things. So I am very excited about this. So as I always do, we'll get this this show kicked off with I'll ask each individual in the group to give a background on themselves, and then we will get into a conversation. So we will start with Kathy. And so if Kathy, if you could give a background on yourself, then we'll keep the roundtable discussion going.
Hello, everyone, and thanks, Matt, for having this session with us. I'm Kathy Horvath. I am currently the Assistant Program Director at Georgetown University's nurse anesthesia program. I am representing kind of the later part of the career path. I have been a nurse anesthetist for 33 years and an educator for almost 20 years now. So, I'm representing kind of what happens with the career path here at the end. I currently still work practice clinically some, but my full-time job is as an educator. And I look forward to telling you a little bit about my path.
All right, great. Thanks, Kathy. So, Donna.
Hi, everyone. Matt, thanks so much for hosting this and having us all on. My name is Donna Keeney. I am a CRNA of 20 years. I think I get to still say that I'm in the middle of my career, right? I don't want to say I'm toward the latter part just yet. I work at Vanderbilt University. I'm a CRNA manager for our ambulatory division there. I run 6 different sites that are in various and sundry places around Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm looking forward to this chat as well. I've been in the business for a few years now and all over cardiovascular anesthesia, as well as general and now ambulatory. So it's been a fun ride.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks, Donna. And yes, I do hope as well that we are talking about the middle of career, because I am right there with you. I am at 19 years myself. So we got a few more left in us, I think. At least I hope so. Okay. So Christine.
I am Christine Tierney. Thanks again for having us. My background, I am in the early stages of my career. I graduated in 2017 from Rosalind Franklin University up in North Chicago, Illinois. And currently I am working part-time at the same location that I started as a new grad. And I work there part-time because my full-time spot is actually with the university. I'm coordinator of clinical education and also course direct several courses throughout there. But still practicing clinically, and I'll be talking a little bit about what it's like to be a new grad and moving to that beginning portion of your career.
All right, great. Look forward to that. And Sarah.
Yes, last but not least. My name is Sarah Forsythe. I am a student at Old Dominion University in their nurse anesthesia program located in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And I am representing the youngest portion of this group. I am not new to healthcare. I was a bedside nurse for over a decade and then made the decision to go back to CRNA school. So I'm happy to be here and happy to talk more about health and wellness. And yeah.
All right, great. Well, you did a lot more than I did, Sarah. I did the bare minimum of bedside nursing. It was CRNA from day one. So I went to Hopkins SICU and did the least amount of time as I possibly could to get accepted into anesthesia training. So I give you a lot of credit for doing all that bedside nursing, because I couldn't wait to get into anesthesia training myself. But so thank you all for joining me. I mean, I think this is great. I am also, just for the listeners, I am also a member of this committee. I have greatly enjoyed being a member of it. I think, and obviously, I consider health and wellness of healthcare providers to be a very serious subject, because we don't do it so well, especially these days, or pay attention to it enough. And I think that this committee does a lot of good, and we're very like-minded individuals. So I've been looking forward to this a lot. So I guess we'll just start out with, you know, I know that we have a lot of, you know, just because we have these the representation so nicely of the different stages of career, if we could maybe just get into this conversation about how it's different in our different stages, because I also have the unique ability to also see yet another generation in, as most listeners have already heard, my father is a CRNA and he graduated in 1973. So he was trained to drop ether in the OR. So that's the cool thing about what I've experienced as far as the stories and how he was trained to do anesthesia, where he was in the operating room literally the first day of training, whereas I didn't enter the operating room 20 some years ago until the second year And I know things are a little bit different, but from a standpoint of what we want to focus on, let's get into a little bit about the culture of wellness and self-care, specifically in healthcare providers, because I always talk about how it begins in our training that we're not supposed to take care of ourselves, only others. And so maybe start with Kathy. Did you experience that early in your training? As I personally did in my training, you know, 20 years ago, and then we can kind of go through it from there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think I experienced it very early, even as a nurse. I feel like it was kind of a nursing or even healthcare culture where you were there to take care of someone else. Everyone was dependent on working together to take care of patients, and your absence, if you were out doing other things, was missed, you know, and it kind of threw off the whole thing. So people, you know, you didn't want to call in sick. You worked really hard. You worked long hours, you know, longer shifts. In the other thing kind of interesting as I've gone through my career is, you know, these last couple years, I've definitely felt that my home life has gotten quieter. And then of course COVID happened, but my work life got busier. And somewhere, you know, in these last couple of years, I found it even more difficult for that work-life balance. So whereas earlier in my career, I was all clinical, I definitely felt this pressure to kind of work a lot of hours to make money and to get settled. Now I feel like there's this, you know, kind of pressure to work, to get ahead and grow professionally. So it's really been, I've these last few years really had to reflect on what's important. And not that work is definitely important and it brings me a lot of joy to do it, but I've had to realize that I need to keep myself healthy and well and balanced to be able to do those other pieces well. Whereas I think before I would have just kind of plowed through it. Maybe it's my age showing that I finally can't plow through it anymore, but I really have been reflecting, you know, I try to preach or try to live what I preach. And so if I'm on a health and wellness committee and kind of telling people that they should have all these great strategies, to keep themselves balanced, you know, I need to take some of that advice myself. So it's been interesting. But yes, definitely early in my career, that nurse anesthesia culture was to kind of sacrifice yourself for others. We all do that in different ways.
Yes, most definitely. And that's kind of where it all begins for, you know, as far as what I've observed is starts in training, then you get into that practice and is it that sacrifice yourself for others? And that, is that endearing? Is that a good practice, or is it, you know, are we creating providers that could be more effective if they engaged in self-care, you know, that sort of thing. So, I'm always curious about what it was like in a different era of training, because I know the way my father described it, it was kind of like he was trained at Hopkins in the hospital program, and it was three RNs and three residents, and they were in the same class, and so they were seen as equals, and so in other words, the RNs kept the same hours as the residents, which was working, you know, 60, 70, 80 hours a week. So yeah. That was, you know, that's where that all began for him. But yeah. So Donna,
very much like that for me.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I'm hearing about, and Sarah, actually you can comment to this. I'm hearing, because I work, you know, again, I mentioned this in previous episodes, I work one-on-one with a lot of students in the areas of working on self-care and stress management, getting through boards and C exam and all that. And I'm finding, or I'm hearing about these experiences that they're having in clinical where they're now part of the hired help, which was probably your era, Kathy, but, and Donna, you can comment to this too, always, you know, also, but that was not my experience in training. We were not hired help. We were there to be
trained. We were never left alone. And now I'm hearing that students are doing their own cases. Is that your experience, Sarah?
Yeah, I've definitely heard. I have a little bit of, if I'm being honest, anxiety about my next clinical rotation, because I have heard that, you know, it can be like that where you're coming up on emergence and you're trying to text your preceptor and they've left the building.
Oh, wow.
it's definitely out there. I don't know. That definitely hasn't been my experience all the time or every day, but it's out there for sure.
I'll never ever forget the first time I was ever left alone in the operating room, and the guy just left the room for like 5 minutes. And yeah, I was terrified, you know, because so I know it's different now, but it's almost kind of like come full circle to way, you know, the way it used to be, where they were literally, you know, the trainees were literally hired help. But yeah, there's me going off on another tangent. So anyway, so Donna, like, are you, you know, we kind of have the same, or not kind of, but we have about the same level of experience of years experience. Is that kind of your experience as well, as far as, where, you know, where you've come from?
It is. I can remember though, and I don't know, maybe this is a regional thing, but when I was in school, I can remember my first year, and it was probably within that first semester as a student. So ours was a little bit different. We were front loaded. We weren't completely didactic up front. Mm. We had a month and then we jumped into clinicals. Mm. And we did both didactic and clinical at the same time. But yeah, I remember that first semester, a couple of rotations, they would leave you alone. And what felt like you were alone, in truth be told, there was probably somebody peeking around the corner and looking, you know, through a window and through the door. But yes, there are, you know, there are instances when they get to the senior level, they do run their own room with an attending. And it, you know, yeah, they have a lot of stress. But it, you know, it's one of those things where that's why we put a lot of emphasis on pairing them with preceptors in the beginning that are very eager to teach and not eat their young. Yeah. And not make it harder. And frankly, yes, I came from that same sort of generation that it was like, yeah, you don't take care of yourself. You know, how dare you call in if you're sick? You know, you don't do that. You know, nurses and healthcare professionals don't get sick. You just don't do that, you know? Yeah. And, you know, and you brought up your preceptees to be the same way, you know, and it's very toxic, as we all know. And, you know, it was one of those things where I look back on seeing the way some of the preceptors, when I was going through training, and it was, they would make it hard on you. They would make it hard on you because it was made hard on them. And I think that is the habit that I find is so hard to break amongst some colleagues within our generation, within our, you know, within our middle and above, you know, career level. It's just hard. It's a hard concept to get to them. And I just, you know, I try to tell people too, because now I am, you know, in a leadership position. I say, think of it as it's not really hard. It's really not a hard concept to grasp. If you can think of it, because most of us, so many of us, it's hard for me not to find somebody who I can relate to, because you're either new and coming out or you're like me and you've probably, you know, had a kid that's, you know, in the workforce at this point. Think of that as your child who's gone into the workforce and somebody's giving them a really hard time at this point. You would hate that. Like if they come home and they tell you what a hard day they've had because somebody was a real jerk to them, you would hate that. You wouldn't like that. So don't impart that onto somebody you're training, you know? That's the only way that I can think to kind of get through to some people sometimes to break it, you know? Luckily, luckily there's not that many people that are still doing that kind of thing, thankfully. But right. Every once in a while, you'll run across somebody who really feels the need, and it may not even be within, you know, anesthesia department. You might see it across departments. You can see somebody like just kind of giving somebody a rough time, you know. But it's all over.
Well, and that's, you know, one of the points I would give to that individual or those individuals are, you know, you're there to train them. Are you creating a competent provider by creating trauma and stress? And now would you want them to put you to sleep? You've created this person who's going to be standing at the head of the bed, trembling and miserable and in a full on sympathetic response because of the way you've treated them. And now do you want them to put your mother to sleep? In right. that state that you've created because you were not supportive of their training, you know, that's exactly. When I start to get, start to get a little uppity about these things. Cause it, to me, it's just intuitive, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated, you know, but I mean, has that been your experience at all? As the proverbial, I guess, new grad, Christine, like from still remembering, like it was yesterday. Of course, we all probably remember like it was yesterday with the training experiences, but remembering the training like it was yesterday to being, you know, just, you know, getting your feet wet in the first, you know, in the first decade of your career.
Yeah, our program was a little bit different. We were the last of the master's program in my school. So our program was technically 27 months. We were able to sit for boards and start working. But then we also had 6 months more of doctoral work that was all kind of crammed in with our master's degree. And so then we finished our doctorate 6 months later. So 27 months of, you know, feet to the fire, front loaded program with didactic and then clinicals after that. And like you said, I still remember that first day. I think it was my middle of my first rotation where I looked over my left shoulder, looked over my right shoulder, and there was nobody there. And it just kind of gives you that really heightened vigilance where you're just ready for anything to go wrong at any moment. But I think portions of that, knowing that you have support around, is really important. And, you know, having students speak up if they don't feel that support, you know, hopefully your preceptors are not leaving the building like Sarah mentioned, but, you know, that just that perception of that there's not somebody there to rescue you in that exact moment. So you have to critically think, I think, is a great skill for students to start learning from an early stage in their training, you know, thinking through scenarios, thinking about worst case scenario, and just prepping for those kind of things in the OR, I think is a really important part of that. I luckily did not have a lot of preceptors that were, you know, just terrible humans. Most of them were pretty good intentioned, wanting you to be a great, competent provider. You know, there's always that handful that just have lots of other things going on in their life. And sometimes they make your existence even a little harder as a student. But I always try to remember that when working with students, it's like, I remember what that was like, and I never wanted somebody else to feel that way. So I think, you know, treating students like they're going to be a colleague soon is the biggest, most important part of that. Because I certainly do remember that. Just listening to Sarah talk, I was having a little flashback there.
I just wanted to speak to kind of something, advice that I got as a student with a preceptor that I kind of wasn't exactly jiving with for the day. And I think it's something to kind of tuck in the back of your head if you're a student, is that, you know, we're going into this clinical situation, but your preceptor might be having an off day too. And so maybe they were up all night with a sick kid. And, you know, we kind of forget that they have things going on in the background too. So maybe if they're having an off day, that can feed into the energy of the clinical experience and to really not take that personal. So that's a bit of advice, kind of thinking about difficult preceptors. And I did have one day a preceptor that we weren't quite jiving, and then come to find out it was his first day back from vacation, and he'd been up all night with his kids the night before. And then we were together a different clinical day, and we had a wonderful day together. So I think that was some advice that I've gotten along the way, That was really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that's great advice. I mean, we have to remember that we're all human. And is there something going on with your colleague? And is it something minor, like I was up all night the night before, it was my kid and I just got back from vacation? Or is it something more more severe, like I just had a critical incident in the OR last week and I don't feel like the same provider anymore? Or I'm struggling with substances or whatever it is, the severe list, you know, that can affect an individual to where those are the things that those of us who are interested in the subject can keep an eye out and train others to keep an eye out for our fellow colleagues. We can kind of go around again and I'll ask the question, what made you interested in this subject? And also what made you interested in joining this National Health and Wellness Committee? Start with Kathy.
Yeah, so I think my interest in membership and student and CRNA wellness stems from my long career of unfortunately seeing some colleagues have trouble with substance use disorder or even succumb to the disease. So early in my career, I had a few deaths of colleagues. And so at first, you know, I was kind of looking at all the data around suicides and substance use disorder, but I think it was the AANA, because they were one of the first ones to kind of get in that space of supporting their members with substance use disorder and having the peer helpline and things like that. It also, they're one of the first to kind of think the other way in thinking about health and wellness. If we can keep our membership healthy, well-balanced, you know, that will help with the substance use disorder side of our profession. So that's really where my interest comes from, is, again, it's probably that caring part of nursing too, trying to care for others. And trying to figure out how, when I became an educator, it's trying to figure out how we can keep the students healthy. You know, it just seems like everybody's always grinding into a student that this is the hardest thing you're ever going to do, and it's going to be terrible, and you all have to stick together, and just, you know, which it is very rigorous and it is really, really hard, but there's got to be some give to that, or just there, it has to be with the eye on the prize, and there's got to be some joy and some attention to your sleep and attention to what you're eating, and not developing any maladaptive coping mechanisms in the process. So I guess my interest has always been more just to keep somebody from going down that path. And so I try to talk a lot about balance and keeping yourself healthy. You know, I really like to exercise and walk and do all kinds of things outdoors. I'm not a great sleeper now that I'm later in life, but, you know, sleep is really important, and, you know, kind of watching what I eat and things like that. So, you know, again, just really like that, the feeling that there are strategies out there. There, I think COVID and just being on this committee has really, now all of a sudden there's all these resources that are available to people trying to come at staying well from different angles. It's not going to be the same for everybody. You know, for some people, just getting enough sleep is going to make them feel like a, you know, happy, healthy human being. But for other people, they're going to have to, you know, work on it more. They're going to have to, you know, maybe go talk to somebody about how they're feeling about their life, or you know, admit that they are having some problems and get help for that. So again, I think it's more just coming from that path and now realizing that I'd like to stay on the health and wellness side of that.
Yeah. And a couple of things back to what a couple of your comments. First of all, to me, rigorous and hard does not have to mean traumatic. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And then also, one of the many things that I would like to work on, other than this culture of poor self-care, is to reduce the stigma of mental health care and mental health assistance. Mm-hmm. It is evidence-based. It's nothing different than going to your primary care for any other issue. And I think that if anyone is struggling with anything, no matter how minor or major, there is evidence-based assistance out there for them to seek. So I'm always talking about that, especially in a lot of my lectures, about how I'll never understand why that stigma even exists today. I mean, I kind of get there was a stigma back at the dawn of psychology because, it was mixed with a little bit of quackery. But today, what we're talking about is evidence-based therapy and medicine. And to me, it's the same as going to any other therapeutic intervention. So Donna, how about you? What motivated you to be interested in the space and to be in the committee?
Well, honestly, I've always kind of really stunk at self-care. And I think the pandemic really was eye-opening for me at how much really everybody did. I don't think it was just healthcare professionals that I was realizing that stunk at it. I think that there was just across the board, so many people did. And, I kind of thought, gosh, if I can figure out ways to get better at this, maybe I can help others get better at it. Because I was thinking maybe if I can do it, maybe somebody else can, And so it is still a struggle. It is not something I have achieved. I don't think that it probably, I don't know, maybe it's not supposed to be, right? Maybe it's supposed to be something that we are constantly, striving for and doing every day. I don't think it's a one-time achievement. I recently have had a lot of struggle with it. I've been overworking and putting way too much on myself and wasn't myself and really had to kind of refocus and realized I was suddenly struggling with lots of things like, having some struggles with imposter syndrome and being triggered by things that normally I wouldn't be triggered by and trying to figure out what in the world was going on. And, when we're triggered, we're not ourselves and we're not, I mean, it's fight or flight at that moment, and it's the normal mechanisms or the mechanism that we have like worked to build for ourselves, the emotional intelligence we work to build for ourselves, the emotional maturity, all of that breaks down. And for me, that was 100% me being overwhelmed and stressed and not taking care of myself. And when I really had to, take some time and figure out what is going on with you and realizing you're not practicing self-care. You're not practicing what you preach like Kathy is doing. She is practicing what she preaches. Then, I realized it's okay to struggle. It's okay. You're going to struggle. And sometimes the struggle is for growth. And sometimes there's a lesson in the struggle that you're supposed to learn. And maybe that lesson is something that you can either help yourself with and come out even stronger or something that you can help somebody else with. So that's what I'm going with. And I'll take it to the next level, but I just try to use those things as stepping stones and building blocks. But all that to say that, no, I'm not perfect at this. And sometimes, I feel we're embarrassed to say that, that we're not perfect at this, but I also think that people need to hear it too, that we're not, but we're trying, and we're looking to see how we can better ourselves. And, if, if it's something that we can try to find the answers for, then maybe we can help you find the answers for as well. So.
Absolutely. I mean, we're definitely always a work in progress. When people ask me that question, my answer, you know, it's kind of along the same lines as yours, is my answer is, you know, why'd you get into all this provider wellness stuff? Why did you get into all this self-care stuff? And my first answer is self-preservation. Mm-hmm. I started to get sick and luckily I feel like I'm a fairly self-aware individual, and mm-hmm. I knew the source of that illness. And it was just long-term chronic stress that was just going unchecked. So I started to practice what I preached, and lo and behold, I felt results. Go figure, right? So then I was already an educator, already on the lecture circuit, I started to turn it into talks. And then, you know, so here we are. But I really became interested, because the more I studied it, the more I realized there's a culture problem as well that I'd like to work on. So, but yeah, the answer was always self-preservation first, and then care for the caregiver after that. So, yeah. So how about you, Christine?
Yeah, I started in practice immediately out of school. I had a great job in a CRNA only practice, where the expectation was very similar to what you guys were talking about historically. Work long hours, don't call in sick because cases will be canceled if you do. Sometimes I was the only CRNA provider at the facility. So, you know, it was very real for me to not only have to kind of prove myself as a new grad coming into an environment where the CRNAs were very well-skilled and practiced for many years, and here I am, this new kid on the block, and kind of had to show, you know, prove myself. And that just kind of transitioned into doing lots and lots of hours, lots of picking up call, lots of, you know, trying to go above and beyond to give that impression that I'm going to work hard and be a good employee. But I also realized 2 years later that I hadn't taken a day off. I hadn't taken a vacation. And so all that during school, when I told my family, hey, when school's over, we'll have time then. Well, time never came. And all that resentment kind of starts to build up after a while. In addition to all that, about 18 months into practicing, one of my classmates and my colleague where I worked actually succumbed from a substance use disorder. And so looking back on that, it's like, well, clearly I was very busy at that time too, but how did I miss the signs? We were so close in so many regards and had the same kind of goals and aspirations. And it's like, how do we miss being able to help him? And so that's what just kind of spurred my interest in wellness, of figuring out how do we do better for everybody, not only ourselves, but our colleagues, our future CRNAs out there. And so that's what I've really tried to do now that I am an educator and dealing with students on a regular basis, is how do we do better? How do we build this culture where it's, like you guys said, okay to be struggling, okay to need help, okay to say, hey, this is too much. But also in there building resiliency to get through the hard times, because it's not an easy career. So that's really been the impetus for joining this committee and just trying to figure out how do we do better? How do I improve my own self-care? Because like you guys mentioned, we are oftentimes the biggest struggle of trying to figure out how do we take care of ourselves when we have so many other priorities and things going on, and really trying to put wellness first.
Well, you hit it on the head. I mean, and it's what I'm constantly talking about as well, whether it's on this podcast or in my lectures or whatever, but, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself first so you can be more effective for others. So we could even go down this road in the wellness committee, only thinking about the wellness of others. And, you know, so we got to remember that the first thing we should do is take care of ourselves so we can better take care of others. So that's one of those tough nuts to crack as a healthcare provider, because it's just so ingrained in the culture that we should only be applying this knowledge to others. But we actually don't realize that we would be more effective providers if we are healthy ourselves, you know. So I was doing a new talk on wellness at the Utah State Association last weekend, and one other kind of metaphor popped into my head. I said, look, take any case, and put yourself at the head of the bed. And it could be any case. It can be a minor case. It can be a AAA. It can be an open heart. Doesn't matter. Whatever the case is, you know, actually make it a hard case. It's a hard case. You're at the head of the bed. You're totally competent to do it. You have plenty of experience and you're standing at the head of the bed, but you have the flu and you're standing. And now take that same exact scenario and you're standing at the head of the bed, completely healthy. Which one of those providers is going to be most effective for that patient? You know, so lots of comparisons, you know, when we talk about the culture, that's for sure. But so Sarah, in training,
yes.
I know that even to this day, from all the experience that I've had in the one-on-one program that I am part of with Dr. Peter Strube, where we help, you know, and talk to and train one-on-one with students to engage in self-care. And Dr. Strube talks about how to take a test and all that good stuff too, of course, which is also important. I've learned a lot about what a lot of the programs across the United States and how they teach and what's going on there. So enlighten us a little bit on what the culture is. And then, of course, what interested you about being the student representative of the committee?
Yeah, so I'll just kind of start out with how I got interested, how I got here. I think speaking to a common theme of what everyone has been saying is I came to the committee a little bit out of self-preservation, sort of a preemptive strike against maybe what was to come, because you do hear, you know, you're going to be crying over your cheese fries and your dinner and you're going to be exhausted and it's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. So I had that in the back of my head. And then, you know, you come in and you see the seniors come in and they just look run down and tired and dry shampoo. They haven't washed their hair. And you're like, ugh, like they look worn out. How can I be in it for the marathon? How can I take care of, because I do want to make it to the finish line. So I think the ball sort of got rolling there, and just wanting to really do more on a smaller scale for my program. Lucky enough to have a program director that's very supportive of health and wellness, but not really a super defined health and wellness curriculum. So in thinking about what I wanted to do my DNP project on, I wanted to develop more of a curriculum at our program. And so in going down that rabbit hole and also having faculty that's very involved at the state level with organizations and then very involved with the AANA and taking us to mid-year assembly and kind of dipping us into the culture and just the organization and everything that has to offer. I started, you know, I got a student membership with AANA. So I was able to log on and access some of the wellness resources and just trying to take some of that and how can I bring it back to my fellow classmates and other classmen, and how can I help make my program even better from a health and wellness perspective? Yeah, so that's how I came to the committee, because, you know, I do think, although it sounds like it's much, health and wellness seems like it's much better than it was, you know, 30 years ago, I think that there is still very much a need and a thirst. We just had the AANA shared experience last month, and we had a record turnout of students. So I think that there's an interest among students to take care of themselves and develop this toolkit. And so, yeah, that's how I think that sort of answers both of your questions. So hopefully it sounds like the culture is moving in a positive direction for health and wellness, but I think there's always something to be done. You know, I'm a believer in always trying to better myself, and change is a good thing. And so I think that there's always room for improvement. So I'm here to just try and make things a little bit better for myself, a little bit better for my classmates, and I just want to make things better for everybody, I guess. I want to leave a footprint. Yeah.
Fantastic. Let me ask you this from a student's perspective, because I've, you know, I'm also adjunct at a few other institutions. So I hear, you know, some of the talk or see some of the emails. And one of the biggest concerns that was created from this fund that we've had these past 3 years is that COVID ICU nurses are entering these incredibly intense programs. And the way it was put in one of the emails that I saw, and this is the extreme, but one of the ways it was put was, we've got ICU RNs who just went through taking care of patients with COVID, and you know, early on in those days, we were all thinking, or some of them were literally risking their lives to take care of these patients. And it turned out, or it's turning out, that some of these RNs are getting legitimate diagnosis of PTSD, and they're going into programs that have sometimes been known to create a diagnosis of PTSD. So I guess, have you seen anything like that, experienced anything like that? And have you also experienced the support that one would need if they're experiencing something like that?
Yeah, so I definitely think that is true. I attended a state level meeting, and there was a speaker that came to talk about COVID-19. And this was I'm about halfway through with my program, so about a year and a half, but this was within that first 6 months of the program. So a little bit ago, a little bit on the fresher side of post-COVID. And when he got up there to talk at the state level meeting, I mean, you looked around and some of my classmates had tears in their eyes. I mean, it was, you could feel a whole energy shift within the whole conference room. Very somber. No one really talked a lot about it, but you could definitely tell that people were reliving experiences throughout the pandemic. So I definitely think that there is some definitely validity to that. And then as far as support, absolutely. I've got great support from my program. And then I have actually accessed some of the support through AANA, and it has been incredibly helpful and instrumental in me working through some things in my training thus far. So that's another thing that I'm passionate about, is just helping students know the resources that are out there. Cause like Kathy said, you know, now we have this huge more access to more resources, but just I think helping educate students on what's out there and how to access it. And even at my school, I didn't realize that you could get free acupuncture through student health. And a lot of my classmates didn't know that. It was just something that I happened to stumble upon looking for health and wellness resources. And I'm like, hey guys, like, did you know that we could get free acupuncture? Like, it's really expensive. And like, so I think, there's a lot of resources, and just helping students know how to tap into those is extremely helpful, I think. And
most definitely. And that's one of the things that I commonly tell the students that I work with, is like, you know, student counseling services, that is a resource that is there. And oh, by the way, you're already paying for it. So you take advantage of it, you know. Yes. Mental health is just so incredibly important, and it's not taken seriously enough. And there are resources out there. So I'm glad to hear that you have experienced the support that I would hope be available to most, if not all, trainees and providers out there. So I think I'll bring up like one last kind of question, because I think, you know, we've already this time has gone by very quickly already. So I'll just throw this out to the committee and just chime in with whatever comments that you have. But what kind of goals do you have with this committee? What kind of outcomes would you ultimately like to see with a committee like this that represents a national organization? Because I think we all definitely are like-minded But what kind of initiatives or outcomes would you like to see through your work with this committee? And literally anybody can chime in here.
I would like to see a bigger movement, more like self-education on, for instance, you know, what's being done with NAM and the seven priorities for, you know, the national, you know, plan for workforce, you know, the health workforce plan for well-being. And yeah. I would like for, honestly, people to be able to educate themselves on that enough to where they can take it to their workplace and say, you know, hey, this is the recommendation. What's our facility doing? What's our institution doing for this? What are we doing? And, you know, it's something that we are talking about at our institution, you know? And, you know, we, going back, you know, to the student support and everything, that is one thing I'm so glad that I'm where I'm at now, because we don't have that kind of student toxicity that I mentioned in the beginning that we're at like smaller places. You know, there is a lot of student support, and, you know, there is a great deal of people who are very excited about educating students, and very happy to do that. And they want to bring them up to like what Chrissy was saying earlier as to, I mean, we're looking at them being our colleagues, you know, we're excited for that. We want that. We have a health and wellness, you know, we have a well-being and a wellness program in place that we talk about these kind of things, what we're doing, and we try to address the seven priority areas and discuss those kind of things, because I don't see how we're going to get away from it in a few years. I don't see how it's not going to at some point be tied to reimbursement. Because if we're not doing something as institutions, as facilities, to mitigate burnout and provide well-being for the health workforce, I don't know how patients are going to be taken care of safely. And so that's, you know, that's kind of my thought on that.
So you're 100%
correct.
That's
what I would like to see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the plan, the national plan for workforce well-being, I think that was something like that.
I never get it right, but yes.
I never get it right either. I mean, I talk all about it in one of my lectures, but one of the things I talk about the details of what's in it in one of my lectures, but at the end of that part of that lecture is, well, you can identify the problem all day long. What is the implementation here? Are we implementing these recommendations that came from a lot of smart people that thought a long time about this? Are we implementing these recommendations? And in most institutions, I'm going to venture a guess to say no, because the bean counters are still in charge. And right now they're throwing money at the problem, one of which is a national provider shortage, because we're all dropping like flies right now. So it's not a sustainable, situation. And I believe that it starts with creating an expectation of self-care as a condition for licensure. Just like the pilots, talk about that ad nauseum, because I think it's a proven paradigm. There's a reason why that's the safest industry ever, because they actually mandate self-care in their industry.
Right.
We should be doing that as well. But anyone else?
I love that thought, Matt. I think if anything we can take away from this committee and what I hope to see that happens with the continuation of this committee is that practicing CRNAs get involved in this stuff. You know, the people that are on the ground doing the cases every day, I feel like the culture still is the fact that, you know, it is changing, but there's still this element of cases still have to get done. There's finite number of hours in the day. We all want to go home. So I think CRNAs still think of a little bit as the mushy stuff, you know, the yoga, the meditation, the deep breathing. Who has time for that when we got cases to do, right? But I think it really is a full circle kind of thing if You want to be able to have enough time and be granted the time off that you are part of your contract. Let's create a good culture and make sure the students are supported so they can graduate and now fill those spots so you can take your vacations. So it's really just a continuous process of building in the changing the culture, making sure that people recognize this is not just mushy, yoga and meditation. It's really taking care of each other so that we can all have a healthy, well life.
You know, I get cranky when people start talking about like that woo stuff or new age stuff. And I say it all the time. I'm like, you know what? Let me pull out the latest issue of New England Journal or JAMA or AANA Journal or the Journal of Nature, which is the Rolls Royce of all science journals. And I will show you empirical Western medicine research and science that proves the efficacy of a daily mindfulness meditation or yoga or breath work. So you want to talk science? I'll talk science with you all day about this new age stuff, you know? So yeah,
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I get it. Show me the evidence and I'll do it. That's fine, but it's all evidence-based. So I'll show you the evidence and then you can start doing it. And by the way, you're welcome because you're going to feel great when you start doing it. Right. So, but yeah.
Yeah. And then I think I would just end with, I agree with both Donna and Christy's comments, but my goal professionally, I guess, and taking from this committee is to start with the student, right? I'm kind of at the career. I'm looking at the next future, the future of our career, and it all kind of has to start with the student. So if we're producing these, completely exhausted, as you said, traumatized people that are entering the career. I think that's a disservice to them. I think it's going to take a lot of hard soul searching by everyone to figure out how we can make school less like that. As you said, it's got to stay rigorous. It's going to be hard, but how can we teach some of those strategies to have a balanced life so that you can just continue it as you go into your early career, mid career, and late career. I know, again, just kind of thinking back at the AANA resources, they've been thinking of these things too. They came out with a curricular framework for programs to use and how they can, kind of incorporate some of these wellness ideas into their curriculum. Which I think is great. Our creditors require us to have some wellness curriculum, but this curricular framework that a task force put together really gives some real life strategies and how to do that. And then also, kind of the AANA has a resource of AANA.com Thrive, which again takes somebody through their career path and helps you think of different strategies you might need along the way. So again, I think one of my goals is just to kind of concentrate on who we're producing to put out into our workforce and hopefully that keeping them healthy throughout their whole career, giving them some of those strategies or at least put in their mind that they need to stay healthy.
Absolutely. And that's what I always talk about as well, is this culture starts in our training. So if we start to change the culture in the training, then there you go. So, well, not to put you on the spot, Sarah, but do you have any goals for outcomes from this committee?
I think just reaching more students. I think as a student, and I was fortunate enough again to be involved in AANA. In the infancy of my studies, but it can be very intimidating. And you're constantly kind of going back and forth between I am a student, but then at some point you transition, like you butterfly into this provider, but where's the threshold? So I think just letting more students know to reach out and access the AANA. And even though you're a student, like they do have resources for you. Just trying to reach more students. I was fortunate enough to go to the AANA Leadership Conference. And I met a couple of students from a completely different program, and they just kind of showed up on their own accord. They weren't sponsored by their school or anything else. So I thought that that was awesome. And we were able to talk, and they just didn't even have, they went for, to just kind of get out of clinical and for something to do while they were in town. And they were like, wow, like there's so much that ANA has to offer. We had no idea. So I think my goal is to just reach more students, let them know what's out there, and just help people develop their toolkit and emphasize that not everybody has to have the same health and wellness stuff in their toolkit. Like maybe exercise like isn't your thing, but maybe something else is, but it still can be effective. And kind of, as we all know, substance use disorder is, you know, prevalent in nursing, but even more so now that I'm kind of headed into this new career. And I don't want to lose any classmates. I don't want to lose any preceptors or faculty. And so, yeah, I just want to make the world a better place. Like, this is my answer. So yeah, just getting the word out there, encouraging students to access resources, develop their toolkit. Not everybody's toolkit has to have the same stuff in it, I guess, is my goal for the committee.
Well, Sarah, I have to say you're pretty amazing. I mean, to do what you're doing as an SRNA, I had zero bandwidth to do that as a student. I mean, and I will tell you that most colleagues that I know who've been, but you're trying, but most people who've been out in practice for a while, you know, don't have the bandwidth to put out there. You know, and even if they do, they're not putting it out there. And so the fact that you're doing this and, you know, really trying and not just trying, but succeeding so well, your leadership skills are just like, wow. I'm very, very impressed. And I just want to say, just keep up the good work. And, you know, please come work with me someday. please be there at the head of the bed someday when I need it.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, a true caregiver, as you all are. So we have reached an hour very, very quickly. That went by like 5 minutes. I want to thank each and every one of you for spending this Friday evening with me to discuss a favorite subject of mine. And as I always do to finish out these episodes, I always give my guest a final thought. So, since again, this is the first time I've ever spoken to more than one person, we'll kind of do the round robin again. So if you wish to give a final thought, please do so. So we'll start with Kathy.
So I think my final thought is I'm just thankful for whoever's listening to this tonight. And I hope tomorrow that you can incorporate or maybe think about one thing that you'd like to do tomorrow that is a good thing for you, for your well-being.
All right, great. And Donna?
You know, my final thought is Sarah for president, I think. I think I want to say, you know, kind of piggyback off what Kathy said earlier, and to all of those starting and down this career path, take Sarah's lead, you know, take Sarah's lead, get involved, and, you know, start really, you know, making wellness a thing. Let's make well-being a thing and change the culture.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Christine?
Yeah, I would say to new grads that are just starting their careers or at the early stages of your career, you certainly want to make a good impression about yourself and where you're working, but don't sacrifice your well-being. Take your vacation days, plan ahead, see family. There's always time to make more money, but time and life are definitely finite.
All right. And Sarah.
Okay. I think my final thought would be, don't be afraid to speak up and advocate for yourself, and you're not alone. And I think that that could apply to a student or even to a practicing CRNA. So don't be afraid to ask for help, because there is someone somewhere that is going through the exact same thing that you can talk to.
Absolutely. Well put. All right. Well, thank you, each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really look forward to putting this out there, and I look forward to hearing the feedback. I think this went really well, and this was a great conversation. I appreciate the opportunity to be part of this committee, and I look forward to more of the work that we'll be doing in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Oh, you do. Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
So that'll do it for this episode. I hope to see you at the next one. This is Matthew Zinder and the Provider Wellness Podcast. Please stay safe and stay well.